From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. 1 year ago today, a Minneapolis police officer murdered George Floyd. Since then, polls suggest anywhere from 15 to 26 million people in the United States have participated in protests demanding justice for Floyd and other people of color who have died at the hands of police. His death sparked a year of widespread protest and conversation about racism in America. The Black Lives Matter movement also gained momentum in the last year. It was originally formed in 2013 by the California-based activist Alicia Garza. She was responding to the acquittal of the Florida man, a self-appointed neighborhood watchman, who shot and killed the unarmed teenager Trayvon Martin. Today, it's possible the movement for Black Lives is the largest in U.S. history. Joining us now to reflect on the development of the Black Lives Matter movement within the last year in Illinois is Nancy Maxwell. She's an activist and a founding member of the Southern Illinois Unity Coalition. Nancy, welcome back to the 21st.
Thank you for having me today.
Also joining us is Drake Mateer. He's a member of Black Students for Revolution at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign and the Champaign County Anti-Racist Coalition. Drake, welcome back to the 21st to you too.
Thank you again for having me as well.
Also with us is Leslie Rolfe. He's an activist from Rockford and a spokesman for the May 30th Alliance. Leslie, thank you for being here too.
Thank you for inviting me. I appreciate being here.
Also, finally, is Sunshine Clemens, co-founder and co-president of the Black Lives Matter Springfield chapter. Sunshine, thank you for being here too.
Thank you for having me back. I appreciate it.
Listeners, we want to know from you, what do you think of the Black Lives Matter movement? And has BLM sparked a change in your attitude or in your community? You can join our conversation. 800-222-9455 is the number, 800-222-9455. Or you can always tweet us at 21st Show. Leslie, I want to begin with you. You've participated in more than 40 protests last summer in Rockford. You've often been seen at the front of marches, leading chants with a microphone or megaphone. When you reflect on this past year and your involvement in the protests, has anything changed for the better?
Yes, I do believe that things have changed for the better. I think that it's important to keep in perspective the amount of change and the type of better, so that way we are not disillusioned and we don't get lured into a sense of false optimism. But just speaking from the community and the city in which I live in, there are more people who are aware of these issues, police terrorism, mass incarceration, and racial injustice. There are more people who are struggling within themselves and struggling in their lives to trying to find a way in which they can contribute to the ending of these things. So I do believe that there has been some change for the better.
And Drake, I want to ask you a similar question. You helped organize several protests in Champaign, Urbana last summer. Have you seen things change for the better?
In terms of changing for the better, when it comes to the consciousness of the people, that is changing for the better. The people are waking up. And as we've seen with the great solidarity with our Palestinian brothers and sisters across the world, we understand that the consciousness of the minds, the consciousness of the people is waking up. So that's changing for the better. The material conditions in which we live in, unfortunately, are not changing for the better. There's still a lot of work to be done. Now, again, like my brother Leslie said, we can't have, false optimism. We can't say that we are necessarily winning. America is falling, but it is not yet a failed empire, as Biden is still pushing American imperialism. So we have to continue to work to create better material conditions for our people in the cities here in which we live. There are things that we have to focus on, including housing for all, food, access to healthy food for all, childcare for all, and healthcare for all. So as Fred Hampton said, we have to ensure that our people are we have to ensure the survival of our people. And so when we can ensure the survival of our people, that's when material conditions will change for the better.
Nancy Maxwell, in an interview with the Southern newspaper last year, last September, you said, "We've been marching for 50 years now, and we shouldn't have to be in this position to keep marching about the same thing, being mistreated for the color of your skin." You've been in activism for a long time. I wonder if you think things were different after and during this year of protest.
There are some things that are different, but as everyone else on the call has stated, we got a long way to go to see true success. But it was little things that surprised me, like turning on the TV and seeing Amazon say Black Lives Matter. I was like, wow. Or to see police all over the USA poke holes in a blue wall. Like, I'm a former Cook County deputy sheriff and a police officer here in Southern Illinois. And you don't tear down the blue wall. You don't say anything against the police, no matter what your color is. But to see people come out and they did a big post on Facebook asking police officers to put their picture up and say, "I am George Floyd." And I see thousands of pictures go up. So I see some differences and I see some changes, but again, we still have a long way to go.
Sunshine Clemens, I want to ask about what inspired you to get involved in this movement. For a lot of people, it was the killing of George Floyd last year. Maybe can you talk about what brought you into this movement, and did you see things change after the, you know, protests that came up after George Floyd's murder last year?
Of course. What got me started with this movement publicly was the consecutive murders on public display of Philando Castile and Alton Sterling several years back. I think with the rapid succession of those murders, it was just like an outcry in the community of, you know, this cannot continue. And we came together to start with a rally and then realized that due to the response of that rally, this was something that needed to be an ongoing presence for Black Lives Matter in our city. So that's how we got started. So we've been here a couple of years now. I will say, like others have said, I did see some things last year that I had not seen in the past, which gave me moments of hope. Last year, there were people who reached out and wanted to be supportive who had been very resistant before. So I do, like Drake said, I do believe that the hearts of the community is starting to open up and be receptive to some of the change, you know, that we're so in desperate need of. But the overall systems that are in place are not reflective of the hearts that are in the community. For example, I mean, we all know the struggles that, you know, are through the various communities. It's been mentioned the food deserts and, you know, mental health struggles. My brother, someone called for a mental health crisis, and my brother was shot by a police officer 4 times. And they were supposed to be coming to help. So when you look at things like that are still happening, and this is, you know, very recent and ongoing, when you look at things like that, it's like, you know, there's the hearts are changing, but the systems that are in place are not reflective of that currently.
My God, thank you for sharing that. I'm sorry to hear that about your brother. I want to take a moment to just reintroduce our guests and remind our listeners this is the 21st. We are talking about 1 year after the killing of George Floyd. Where is the Black Lives Matter movement today? What has it achieved? What does it still have yet to do in its goals? We're speaking with Sunshine Clemens, who is with Black Lives Matter's Springfield chapter, Leslie Rolfe, an activist in Rockford, spokesman for the May 30th Alliance, Drake Mateer, member of Black Students for Revolution and the co-founder of the Champaign County Anti-Racist Coalition, and Nancy Maxwell, an activist and founding member of the Southern Illinois Unity Coalition. Listeners, we want to hear from you. 800-222-9455 is the number. We also got a few texts from our listeners on this, from our 21st texting group. Brody in Champaign said, "The burst of Black voices that followed Mr. Floyd's death humbled me. I thought I understood, but I didn't." So, listeners, again, we want to hear from you. What has been your reaction to the Black Lives Matter movement in the last year in particular? 800-222-9455 is the number. Leslie, growing up, you attended, I understand, two different kinds of schools, one predominantly white private school, the other public. Black and Latino students made up two-thirds of the student body. Can you talk about the contrasting experiences and how that affected your view of how race plays a role in life in Rockford?
Yeah, I think that that has been one of the foundations of my positioning in the movement here in Rockford is being able to have participated in some of the privilege that we speak of when we speak about white privilege and an understanding that white privilege looks different in the 21st century than it looked in the 20th century or in the 19th century. And understanding, you know, educational, the educational differences and the educational disproportionalities that Black and brown people deal with. You know, it's one thing to read about it in a book or one thing to hear about somebody talk about it. But it's another thing to go to these, you know, kindergarten to sixth grade. I went to a private school and I seen the care that was put into the students, the care that was put into the teachers and into the building and, you know, just into the whole facet of the system. And then I went to public schools here in Rockford, Illinois, where I don't know how many people may know this, but the RPS 205 school district was named in a lawsuit. And in the lawsuit, it said that it was possible that the city of Rockford had one of the most segregated school systems in American history. And so to go to, you know, my mother went to, and my uncles went to middle school and elementary, middle school and high school here in Rockford, Illinois. So they partook in that segregated school system. And so for me to, you know, as another generation to go to, I went to Lincoln Middle School, which is named after a man that for all intents and purposes, did not believe in equality or equity for Black people. And that was the first public school introduction to a public school that I went to. And when I went to high school, I went to Thomas Jefferson High School, a man who was a infamous slaveholder and who had raped his slaves and had children who were slaves and enslaved his children. And I seen as I walked through the hallways in these schools that were named after people who did not care for Black people, that these institutions themselves did not care for Black people and did not care for the issues that were affecting Black people and were not teaching Black people about Black people or brown people about brown people. And so as some of these things have happened in this last year and I've had conversations with people who may be from a different ideological beliefs or from a different standpoints, I've had experience in sort of both realms. I've been able to tap into the white privilege that this country has been built on and benefit from it in education. And then I've also been able to firsthand see the people who are exploited from that privilege, the people who are taking it, who are oppressed because of that privilege. And so I think that that has been something that's been very intricate for my involvement in the movement.
Nancy, I want to ask you, you mentioned earlier you were a police officer, deputy sheriff. You were the first Black woman, I believe, to be a police officer in Mounds, Illinois. Has the past year changed the way you've thought about or talked about policing?
Very little. Very little. Still in Southern Illinois, the deep far south from Harrisburg on down. Most of the officers, it's 99.9% still all white. So that has not changed. However, Carbondale is working on a program to diversify the police department. And it's been difficult, but right now I think we're hiring two police officers that are of color. So not only is the police department like that in Southern Illinois, but so is the schools. A lot of the schools, there are more white teachers than there are Black. And we are pushing here for training, diversity training for the staff and a committee to hire a more diverse staff as far as education. And like Leslie said, I didn't think about it today, but the same schools are named down here. It's like Lincoln, it's like Jefferson. There are no schools that represent any prominent Black African-Americans that our students can look up to and learn history about.
And we need to take a break in about Well, you know what? Let me just give the number now. If listeners want to join our conversation, it's 800-222-9455, 800-222-9455. We have a couple of voicemails we're going to play when we come back, but we do want to hear from you. We are talking about it's been 1 year since the murder of George Floyd by a Minneapolis police officer. We're speaking with four activists who have been active in the Black Lives Matter protests and other racial justice protests and groups in the past year since that time. 800-222-9455 is the number if you want to join our conversation. We're going to continue after a short break. You're listening to The 21st. Stay with us.
The 21st is made possible in part by AARP Illinois, dedicated to working in Illinois to ensure all Illinois residents are empowered to live no matter what age, color of skin, or zip code. More at disruptdisparitiesil.com.
This is The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. As you know, a year ago today, a Minneapolis police officer murdered George Floyd. Since then, estimates are anywhere from 15 to 26 million people in the United States alone have participated in protests demanding justice for Floyd and other people of color who have been killed by police. We are having a conversation about that year of protest with Drake Mateer. He's a member of Black Students for Revolution at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. Nancy Maxwell, activist and founding member of the Southern Illinois Unity Coalition. Leslie Rolfe, an activist from Rockford, spokesman for the May 30th Alliance. And Sunshine Clemens, co-founder and co-president of the Black Lives Matter Springfield chapter. Listeners, if you want to join our conversation, we'd love to hear from you. Has Black Lives Matter influenced your thinking in the past year? 800-222-9455. Did you yourself take to the streets to join the calls for justice? 800-222-9455 is the number. 800-222-9455. I want to ask about, we put this question out, as I mentioned, to our texting group. We did get some pushback from people. So I want to ask about some of the things we heard. Jean from Carmi, Illinois, said, I think I fear I'm mispronouncing that, but Jean said, I'm of the opinion that all lives matter and that when you start modifying the word life, you automatically put yourself into a racist situation. We should deal with police brutality regardless of whether it's against blacks, whites, Asians, or any other group exactly the same way, severely with justice, end quote. And I also want to play this voicemail we got.
Hello, this is Juanita from Illinois. He shouldn't have been murdered, and I feel for the family. I feel for him. The BLM has overgrown their work. They think they're going to overtake the white community or the Asian community or the Koreans or the Jews. It's not going to happen. This generation did nothing to them.
Okay, that is an edited version of her remarks. Drake, I mean, this has been a polarizing year. There has been a lot of pushback against the movement for Black Lives. How do you respond when you encounter that sort of critique?
First, I must laugh. I have to laugh at that. BLM is Black Lives Matters is a new movement, but it is a movement along with the Black Liberation Movement, which is a 400-plus year struggle. I personally could care less about people who are critiquing our approach to resistance, our approach to resistance, when they are not critiquing the structures and the systems that are in place that require us to resist in the first place. And so I could care less. And you know, we're at this time, and I've had a great conversation with a comrade the other day. At this time, it is truly a bifurcation point for individuals. Either you are actively engaged in combating racism, and not just racism at the individual level, but we're talking about the institution, the universal, the systemic level, the structural level. Individuals have to come together and understand it is one way or another. Either you are actively fighting racism, or you are actively playing a part in the role of playing an active part in racism and American imperialism. The individual was talking about overtaking the certain communities. Like I tell white folks all the time, you've been waiting for 400 years for Black people to do what y'all have done to the world. It's not going to happen. Even after the initial rebellions, it's not going to happen. So the fact that we're asking for defunding of the police, that is the terminology. That was the terminology, let's say, in June of May 2020. Now, of course, that language has changed to abolish, to the police abolishing capitalism. But we have always been Black, the Black agenda, the Black liberation movement has always been the moral agenda. There has not been any gains in this country that any other person that's not Black has gained if it wasn't for the Black liberation movement. The current LGBTQ plus movement is because of Marsha P. Johnson, because of Black and brown trans women rising up. If it wasn't for Black women being told to march behind white women during the feminist suffrage movement, white women probably wouldn't have the right to vote if it wasn't for Black women rising up along with them. But then white women told them again, you couldn't vote after they got the deed, that after the deed was done. Black people, when it came to the Civil Rights Bill, everybody else sat on the sidelines as Black people were getting their butts beat to just sit next to white folks at their restaurant in the counter. And then everybody came out talking about minority, I am this, that, and the other, to dilute the power that was gained by the Civil Rights Bill for Black people. And that is why they implemented the Immigration Act of 1965 to dilute the power that Black people were going to gain. The country has been predominantly Black and white, 90%, since its inception. Since its inception. And we see that Black people have been, the Black agenda has been the moral agenda. Has always been the moral agenda. However, I could care less about the critique of bourgeois, white, Black, regardless of race, class, regardless of race or religion. Could care less about the critique of the elites or the bourgeois or those who believe they are actively participating in that, how delusional they are. But I end with that.
All right. Sunshine Clemens, I want to ask if maybe you can respond as well to this idea that we heard in that text message, all lives matter. I mean, you live in a county, Sangamon County, where it's still a Republican county. You have to convince people to, come along with some of the reforms that the Black Lives Matter movement is pushing for. Can you talk about what you respond to that idea that you hear from people, all lives matter, and what you mean when you say Black Lives Matter?
I think it's just been abundantly clear, and I think people who still say all lives matter in response to Black Lives Matter know that we're not saying that other lives don't matter or that they don't matter on the same level. I think they are just trying to be argumentative at that point, and I don't really put a whole lot of energy into giving responses to that. Usually my response is, oh, so you agree Black lives do matter. Because if you're saying all lives matter, that includes Black. And that's just become my response. Mm. And it just tends to shut people down more. But I'm more focused on the changes that we are needing. We should not have to be out here asking for the same thing that Martin Luther King was asking for, or Malcolm X was asking for. So I don't let little things like that distract me or put a whole lot of energy into giving, a formulated response on that, because I know they don't want to hear that. They don't want to hear the response. They just want to be combative to the real message that we have out here. Like, we've got so many people in our jail system who are in there because, they were convinced to take a plea deal. They might not even have, committed whatever the crime is. There are real changes that need to be made. Like, for example, I mentioned my brother earlier. He's the victim in his situation, but now the system is charging him with the crime, even though he's the victim. Those are the kind of things that we are fighting against. So responses like that they don't get very far with me. It's not something that I even really waste my time on at this point.
Yeah. Leslie, let me ask you, some of the demands, among the demands made of Rockford is use of body cameras on police officers. It's been about a year since these demands, and as I understand, Rockford police officers still are not equipped with them. The city council is considering a $3.5 million plan to purchase a few hundred body cameras over the next 5 years. Can you talk about what you think about that proposal? And then, you know, in a broader sense, if it's taken that much just to get something like body cameras, which a lot of other departments are already doing, what hope is there for, you know, defunding, abolishing, reallocating money away from police to social workers and other types of unarmed responders? Take that where you will.
I think that's a very important point and a very important those are very important events because it does give a very specific image of the city of Rockford when you find out that how long it has taken for them to get the body cameras and put the body cameras in place. I believe that the last report that we seen was that by the end of the summer, in the next 3 months, all officers should be equipped with body cameras. And so I think that is one of those things where you have to put gains in perspective. It's unfortunate that it took this long for them to have body cameras, that they didn't already have body cameras to begin with. But it's a gain in the sense that they are now, because of the leverage and the pressure that has been put on them by the community activists and by the Rockford Police Department went out and got those body cameras. I do not believe that without the leverage and the pressure that was put on them by organizations and activists in this movement that was going on, that we would be sitting here talking about them having body cameras in the next 3 months. And so I think that is a sort of gain. But I think that multiple people have pointed out, the morality of these issues and how the Black struggle is a moral struggle. I think that is something that is highlighted as not being a gain, a step not being made forward, that you had to basically pull teeth out, that you had to get the city council and the city of Rockford kicking and screaming to get these body cameras when, as you said, and as people know, multiple different law enforcement agencies already have the body cameras. Even just the neighboring law enforcement here, the Winnebago County Sheriff deputies have the body cameras. And so it tells you a lot that about where Rockford is at as a city and the mindset of the people here, that even though it is a Democratic city and what some people may call a liberal city, they still don't want to address these issues genuinely. And I think that, you know, not to run too long, but I think that the question that you raise about the body cameras also brings an important point of emphasis for correlation and for cross-referencing to bring up the fact that here in unincorporated Rockford, which is Rockford, you know how cities work with land areas, a young man was murdered by the Winnebago County Sheriff deputies. His name was Faustin Guaitigo, and the Winnebago County Sheriff deputies in this county, in the area of that we live in, they are equipped with body cameras. But we have learned two things about the body cameras that they are equipped with. One of them is that during protests last year, they would choose to turn the body cameras on and off. And so at their discretion, those body cameras could be nullified. And then also what we've learned, sorry, it's got a little breeze of wind here, but also one of the things that we've learned is that when Faustin Guaitigo was murdered, there were multiple perspectives of the body camera footage. There was multiple videos that was released. The videos got released to the public. And because of the fact that the consciousness of the community, the consciousness of the city was not raised enough to a high enough extent to understand the monstrosity of this crime, there was a lack of outpour and a lack of outcry. And we are in the midst of that shooting, that murder of Faustin Guaitigo being investigated. And unfortunately, here in Rockford, Illinois, and in the Winnebago County, there's never been an officer found to be unjustifiable in his use of force in the last 12 years since this task force has been created. And so we sit at a place where we have to understand that it is a gain for the Rockford Police Department to now become equipped with body cameras. But within that gain, we are reminded that the consciousness of the community of Rock Hill multiple years behind the technology that they are about to implement. And so we must do the job of fast forwarding the consciousness to the city to be in accordance with the technology that is coming in the city. So it is good that body cameras are coming. It shows the power that we do have and the power that we have yielded. But we must do the job of making sure that when people see these videos of people being murdered and killed by these law enforcement agencies in the state sanctioned violence, that they do not look for scapegoats so they don't have to feel guilty or feel remorse or have to be or do any action about it. And we have to get people to the place where when they hear about these things that and they see these visuals that business as usual stops, or else what we'll end up having is a bunch of cities and a bunch of states with body cameras. And then every day Black people are just living the trauma of seeing themselves murdered and killed and other races for that matter as well, killed from state sanctioned violence, and then having to be reminded that we have no power to alter these things.
I want to, in the few minutes we have remaining, I want to take a call. Rita is on the line from Champaign. Rita, thank you for calling in.
Yeah, thank you for having this very important discussion and an open line. Discussing things that have occurred over the last year, I've actually had the honor of organizing and standing beside Drake following the murder of George Floyd. Virtually, and I literally mean virtually, everyone became clear-eyed and conceive the imperfections in healthcare, housing, employment, criminal justice, and education. These institutions continue to hinder the upward mobility of people of color. I would describe it as the imperfect storm where we've seen racism and the pandemic collide. What we do know is that racism is structurally rooted in white supremacy, thus a white issue. So my question is, what will it take for there to be true liberation for Black and brown people?
All right, Rita, thank you for that question. Nancy, I know we've only got about a minute or so remaining in our segment, but it's a big question. Do you want to take it? What will it take for true liberation?
For us to not stop fighting for it. If you look at when Trayvon Martin got killed, we marched all over the world. It was a big uproar, and then it got quiet again. This time after George Floyd, the whole year has been people have kept going. They kept marching. They kept speaking out. They kept fighting for change. We can't stop. I think, in my opinion, that's the one big thing. We can't stop fighting for it. We can't get complacent. We can't calm down again after a little while. We got to keep the movement going.
Sunshine Clemens, what about you? Any final thoughts? Where is the movement going? Will it maintain the sort of hold on the American conversation that it's had in the last year?
I think that we are, we have good momentum. I think the consistency of the, and the fact that the people themselves are starting to wake up and also fall in line and, you know, push this messaging and the actions forward to try to bring about change. I think that, you know, we've got a good path forward. I don't see the momentum slowing down right now. I think it's also important, just as important as we are out at the podiums and, you know, publicly speaking and, you know, bringing about change and being on the news. I can tell by the caliber of the people that are on this call, they are also fighting for those things behind the scenes. And I think that's what sometimes people forget is that we're not just at the podiums, you know, at these events. We're also, you know, meeting with the police and, you know, meeting with the state's attorney's office or the chief's office, you know, the sheriff's office, et cetera. Those meetings are also sometimes where some of those significant changes come about. So I just want people to keep in mind that just because you're not seeing someone at a podium at a rally every week doesn't mean that that serious and significant change is happening. So
all
continue
right.
to
and we need
do
to leave
what you can in your circle.
We need to leave our conversation there. Sunshine Clemens in Springfield, Leslie Rolfe in Rockford, Drake Mateer, Champaign-Urbana, and Nancy Maxwell from Southern Illinois. Thank you for being here today on the 21st. More to come after this. Stay with us.